You're listening to HG101, a proud part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the HG101 podcast is made possible by our amazing Patreon supporters who help keep the show alive by donating as little as $2 a month. You can be like them. By chipping in, you'll not only help keep the lights on at HG101 Towers, you'll also gain access to our secret patrons-only RSS feed. That's the feed that gets an extra bonus episode every week. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
I always find the KOF games very confusing. Some characters have projectiles and kind of just fireball, teleport, moonkick. And someone else is like, I punch in the air slightly.
Who out there is like, okay, I want to be a king among fighters. What style should I adopt? Karate or the fireball dragon style? I don't know. I can't choose. They're so equally matched.
Or you can pelt the enemy to death with basketballs, like Lucky.
He's got unlimited basketballs, and
I do like that, because it's like the Harlem Globetrotters existed in the Street Fighter universe.
I mean, that's what I always liked about Dan from Street Fighter, is he's basically like, I have trained my entire life to fight. Why can that guy use fireballs? What the hell is going on?
So go to patreon.com/HG101 and donate a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's top 47,858 games of all time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs Bauer! You change again? I'll kill ya!
Okay, everybody, this is Top 47K Games, and this is episode 258, and we are doing Pandora's Tower! Sorry, I don't know, I'm incapable of saying that word without everything going wrong. Alright, I feel better now, though. This was nominated to us by Stefan? 17TX on Apple Podcasts.
That's pronounced Stephen.
It is Stephen?
That's how, like, Stephen King spells his name.
Okay, that's how he spells his name.
Yes.
S-T-E-V-N, but, you know.
Well, yeah, but, nope, this is... It could be Stephen King. He could be a big Wii fan.
If you were going to pick a Wii game that Stephen King would like, this would be in the top five, I think.
I think I would have gone with Baroque, personally, but...
Yeah, well, the developer for this one is Gambarion, which, if you don't recognize the name, I don't blame you. This is their first non-licensed game, and this game came about, basically, I believe they begged Nintendo to let them make an original game, and Iwata was like, are you sure you want to make this game? And they were like, yep! So he signed off on it, is my what I read about this one. They proposed this game, and Nintendo agreed to publish it, basically. Which they did in Japan and in Europe. Get stuffed, the US! You don't get this game. And it was released May 26th, 2011, in Japan. And I am Carl.
I'm the Great Clade, and you know we did get it eventually, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm making a little joke because Nintendo seriously did just decide not to release this game in America. They just went, nope. We'll put it in Europe, and Europe can have it, but in a bizarre, usually a game will come out in the US, and then Europe will get screwed over. But in this game's case, they were just like, meh, which is kind of funny. And then a bunch of US fans actually created like a whole series of petitions forming...
Yeah,
like a fan campaign called Operation Rainfall, where they basically begged a bunch of publishers and Nintendo themselves to basically bring games. There's three games in total. The Last Story, Xenoblade Chronicles, and this game, Pandora's Tower. And they basically lobbied... It's really funny to me when a bunch of people get together and are like, please let us give you our money. Please, we just want to give you our money. And it's
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of on that one because the Wii got, like, diddly shit for RPGs. And then all three of these games came out in Europe, like, years before we got it. And everyone's like, but the English have the game. We will just take it with the English localization. And then Xenoblade is kind of famous where we got, like, the British voice acting. So everyone sounds all prim and proper and British, y'all. Y'all. And,
the famous which, British colloquialism.
Y'all.
How a spot of tea then, y'all.
that kind of worked out for Xenoblade. It's like Dragon Quest now, where the game would just be weird anymore if it wasn't all British-y voice acting. So XE did this game.
Yes, but I believe they literally just published it.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's what I was kind of getting to. I think Exeed or Nintendo did Last Story, and then GameStop did Xenoblade. That's not a joke. That, like, Xenoblade was a GameStop exclusive forever and ever, and I think until the 3DS port, I think.
I mean, like, it kind of makes sense, though. If the game is done, they could probably negotiate a pretty sweet deal. Like,
yeah, no, they stumped up the cash and like, listen, we've got people, a lot of people who are going to buy this game. We'll just write this check and it's all ours, I guess. Go us.
Yeah, do we keep, then we can make the difference because now we keep the publisher money and the store money. That's a great deal. It might be illegal. I don't quite know.
May have, that's, they've actually been secretly fighting monopoly laws.
Yes.
So.
So Pandora's Tower, which we will talk about now, we just crossed the 5-minute mark, which is a perfect time to talk about the actual game that we will be covering for the rest of the show.
Wow, that's a world record for us, really.
So Pandora's Tower is a pretty interesting game because the sort of defining aspect of it was that it's basically a love story, kind of, except theme is that the girl is going to turn into a horrifying monster if she does not get cured of a evil make you a monster disease. So her and her boyfriend, who you play as, Arion, I think her name is Elena or Elena, it's that kind of name, get whisked off to the titular towers. I think Pandora's Tower might be the last of the towers, and there's like 13 in total. And you have to fight through these towers in just order. The game just sends you to each one, beat a boss, you go to the next one, and to basically acquire the items to cure her in order to save your fiancé, essentially, within the game's context. That's kind of the game, really. There's a surprisingly large world surrounding it that you don't get very much of at all. There's a lot of talk about empires and different societies that all kind of like intermingle within this like empire, and there's some stuff going on about refugees and stateless people, and there's something about a massive rift that's opened up in the middle of the world, which is what the towers are spectacularly suspended between with giant chains. Chain metaphor in this. It's a cool visual, but a lot of that is only kind of mostly sort of hinted at. The game opens with a really cool cutscene where just a bunch of stuff explodes and your character has to escape from Johnny Lore, who need to kill your wife or your fiance because she's a monster and they're running around chopping the heads off anyone who becomes a monster, basically. And
yeah, this game has a lot in common with Final Fantasy 13 the more we talk about it. It's almost the plot of Final Fantasy.
We're not talking about Final Fantasy 13. I would say that for this one, it feels a lot more like they played Ico and Shadow of the Colossus and were like, yeah, we can do that. We can make that game. Let's do it.
It can't possibly be the second best game of all time. We could possibly surpass that.
Look, I've got to tell you, it's got motion controls, so we might actually get to the second best game of all time on this.
Ooh,
one.
There you go.
it does kind of very much feel like it's inspired by that sort of, I guess, low plot presentation. It's pretty clear they wrote a big-ass design document and a big-ass world bible, and then you just get little pieces here and there. Characters. There's not many characters. There's you, Arion, and I say you because he's a bit boring. Like, I'm sorry I'm just called boring, but he...
Well, that's rude.
He's so bland. He's just like, he does like a couple of cute little things, but he doesn't talk. He's a silent protagonist, and the game even lampshades it, kind of, but it bothers me because this game is kind of, these are the two main characters, right? And one of them doesn't talk. So it's a little silly, and there's a third character who basically is, I'll call her the Seer character. She's technically like a, she leads you to the place, and she clearly knows more about what's going on because she led you to this place and has told you, to cure your wife, all you need to do is murder a bunch of really big monsters and then destroy them and then feed them to your wife. And it's like, how do you know all this?
It's a metaphor for a first year of marriage.
Yeah, it's like, in Harvester, when the babies are eating the mother, that's also a metaphor. This is the same metaphor.
Yes, it's all game developers have had been married for 1 year before they develop video games.
You're either married or you develop video games. You don't get to be both. So the game, as it actually goes, is a series of a set of dungeons, and it's quite a lightweight dungeon sort of explorey kind of game. It's all kind of fixed camera angle perspective stuff. It sometimes, you know, the camera kind of free moves a little bit, but for the most part, it's kind of locked in, and it just shows you different parts of the towers, which are, they're okay. Everything kind of has this, I can't believe it's not a PlayStation 2 aesthetic to it, which not,
I was, not super I was, I always think of that, like, the weird higher definition, like, PS2 is like, I always think it looks like a PSP game, because PSP games were like, always seemed like they had like better textures in a lot of regards, but like weirder models. Like they're more rounder. Like there's some look to a PSP game that I've never been able to quite explain, but every time I see it, I'm like, that looks like a PSP game. And then I play this one, I'm like, wait a goddamn second. How did they do that?
It's not really, it has some really good art in places, but the actual look of the towers is a bit bland, and you're going to be spending the entire game in the towers, so watch out for that.
Going back to the Operation Rainfall, this is kind of the weirdest one that people really kind of latched onto, because, like you said, it is kind of like a... It really does feel like a company just kind of standing up and go, we're going to make a thing! And they're like, okay. And they're like, we got all these really neat ideas! And Nintendo sat them down, it's like, but money! And they're like, right, we hadn't thought of that.
the Nintendo were like, are you sure? And they were like, yeah, we got it. It's good.
You know how Monolith made those Xenosaga games, all six of them? And Nintendo's like, So then they just kind of kept this big old world.
It's an interesting thing because obviously it uses the Wiimote. So I have to explain the controls a little bit just because it's probably the most interesting thing the game does. You move around with the nunchuck, as you would expect. You know, you've got the analog stick on the left-hand side, or the right-hand side, I guess, because you can do that. It's pretty cool, you know, if you're left-handed. Disgusting. the game, your character has a sword, so you swing that by just mashing the A button. You can hold it down, and you can do a charge sword, and you can press the button again at the right time, and you do kind of an extra combo. And that's kind of it for your sword thing. you've got a dodge block button, and that's kind of like the entire basic controls. The chief gimmick of the game, which is kind of a very mixed metaphor in this one, because it's just chains. There's chains everywhere. The mysterious Moderva, the old woman merchant character, hands you a chain, a magic chain that is being passed down amongst her people, which strengthens the bond between individuals or something, but also gets stronger when you kill monsters, but only boss monsters who are called masters. It's a bit, it makes sense, but it's also doesn't really connect at all. You get a chain, and the cool thing about the chain is that you actually aim it using the Wiimote and the pointing tool. So you kind of, I'd say it's intuitive enough that you don't quite break the fourth wall, but basically you aim on the screen and you can fire the chain at bits of the wall, which your character will then shoot at the chain at and will then hook up and hold onto the wall. You can shoot it at, you can kind of Tarzan things, you know, you can shoot a, like a loop, and then your character will do the whole swing back and forth thing. And kind of most importantly, it's got a usage in combat, so you can chain enemies. Either you can shoot them in the legs, and then their legs will get wrapped up in a chain, and they'll fall down, and they'll kind of flail their arms and try and hit you. Or you can wrap the chain around their head sometimes, and then they'll be blind, and they'll stumble around and swing at you. And you can do kind of like cool stuff, and you can use the Wiimote's motion, as I said. You can kind of rip it backwards, like you're, you know, pulling a chain essentially backwards, and then your character will rip the chain out from whatever it is. So if you hit an enemy in their weak spot, you can basically just rip the chain right out and it'll hurt them a bit. Or your character can kind of do a magic chain shuffle kind of thing where they just sort of pull the chain, kind of. I don't know how that makes it more dangerous, but they generate like a bigger chain damage bar, and then if you rip it out, it does more damage, and that's pretty cool. And there's some other stuff where you kind of like chain enemies to enemies, and then when you hit one enemy, it does damage to the other enemy. Or you can pick up some enemies and you can fling them into the wall and stuff. Basically, I'm saying it's pretty dang cool. Like,
it is.
I don't know of any other game that did that exact thing on the Wiimote kind of stuff.
No, like, but I always wonder if how many Wiimote games we missed, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously you had games where it uses the pointer functionality. There's quite a few games where you point in the environment. That's that was...
You may have heard of it. It's called Wii Sports.
But this game kind of takes a smart approach. It's very elegant about it. And it's quite thoughtful in places. Like, when you use the aim at the screen mode, you can press a zoom button, and it kind of zooms almost silent scope style. Like, it just kind of zooms a small part of the screen out. And then it goes into slow-mo, so if you're trying to hit a very specific part, you can kind of aim, and then it slows, and you fire it, and then you can fire it at something else. And this really becomes interesting when you gotta fight a boss, because a boss will be like, I'm going to come and hit you, and if you try and shoot them in their weak spot, they'll just turn around and basically rip the chain right out, so that's not gonna work. Or if you shoot them in the face, they'll just bite the chain and break it. It's a magic chain that comes back, don't worry about it.
Game over.
But what you end up doing is you shoot part of the boss and then shoot part of the environment, and now the boss is kind of chained there, and it just kind of pulls at it like, because it can't break it straight away. And then you can run around behind the boss, break the chain yourself manually, and then it kind of like confusedly looks around, and then you can hit it in the weak spot and start pulling your chain and jerking your chain, and you just keep jerking, and then you jerk really hard, and then it does a lot of damage to the boss.
No, keep going with this jerking thing.
Look, I'm gonna be honest, there's a lot of jerking in this game. To the extent that I was jerked out, well before the end of the game, I was done jerking. There's too much, you would say. But I make a very serious point. The game just kind of does that for the whole game. Like, it's a really cool game for a few hours, and it doesn't have much more to present to you. It's got crafting where you upgrade your equipment, but it doesn't really mean anything, and it doesn't really feel necessary. And like, why would you grind your way through the levels? Because you can repeat the dungeon and stuff, and that's kind of like, why?
Padding.
I don't really need to do that. And also, like, if I needed to do that, I'd probably hate the game, because it's like, I beat that dungeon, just let me go to the next one. There's, you know, the loop is not exciting enough to keep redoing the same bits and pieces.
And that's sort of kind of the problem with the game, is it's fairly repetitive. And the problem with repetitive and getting your arms and swinging into it, it gets to be kind of a tiring game. Not necessarily tiring, but it's hard to justify, like, waving your arms around over and over and over again. So
yeah, so, I mean,
repetitive Wii games tend to be more of a problem than regular repetitive games.
Yeah,
just like, sort of where I fell out of love with the game.
Yeah, because what I didn't say is that when an enemy is defeated, they fall to the ground, and you actually can shoot your chain at parts of them, depending on the enemy and the size, and then you actually can rip a crafting item out of them. So you'll rip out a bone or a fang or something, which you can then use. And it sounds really cool, and honestly, it is really cool. But when you've done it like 100 times, it's less cool and more continues to be busy work. And I don't like busy working games usually, and especially when it doesn't feel like you're making that much progress, because the main progress is going through the dungeons and returning to your fiance. And this is the other hook of the game, which is really cool. You actually have a time limit in the dungeons, because your partner is infected with the curse, and the curse is actually a ticking time bomb, and she has to consume beast flesh in order to not fully become a monster. And you're obviously trying to beat the main bosses, as I said, who have master flesh, which removes the curse. But every time you go into the dungeon, she gradually becomes more of a beast. So you actually have to return to her if you don't clear the dungeon in time in order to give her regular beast flesh. And then she will be not cured, but the curse will be wound back for a little bit. So there's a constant time pressure on the player, so you sometimes will open shortcuts in the levels, especially the later ones, which are obviously longer and more complicated. You know, you really have to start planning out your trip, make sure that you don't spend too long in the dungeon, because otherwise when you try and go back, you might find that she's a horrifying monster and it's an instant game over, and you have to reload from a save. And that's okay, you can save pretty much whenever you want in the observatory, which acts as your home base, at which you can return to when you leave a dungeon. And that's kind of like one of the more interesting, cool parts of the game, because you have this like little side, I'm going to call her Tamagotchi wife, going on here, because you can acquire different items and you can give them to her, and she can translate the various texts that you pick up, so you can actually, she's kind of doing something in the background, and every time you show up, she says, you know, like, she says little things, talks about how worried she is, she writes a little diary that you can read, and she's got all these little cutscenes and stuff where she'll, you know, be doing something or be kind of trying to hide how much of a monster she's kind of becoming. And there's all these nice little touches that they really tried to work in a slightly more interesting thing. But unfortunately, it is kind of tied to a game, which is a bit, it's really interesting for some time, and then it gets quite repetitive because they had a lot of trouble making the controls more. The game was a little bit in development problems because they just couldn't figure out how they were going to do. I think they did admirably, but
I mean, a lot of like what you said, that's, you know, pretty typical of RPGs of the era. Like, oh, we got to have crafting and we got to have things that get decoded, and I don't know, it's a weird game. It's
also like the RPG bit is kind of not very present, because obviously there really is only three characters in the game.
I do remember that from reviews. Everyone's like, so this is the RPG we're waiting for?
It's really like, I would be very hesitant to call it an RPG. It really is more of a lightweight action platformer. You can't jump, but your character does scurry over things, and you do kind of swing across things, and you jump and across like small gaps, and you can ledge or whatever, where, you know, you kind of climb off the back of a ledge and kind of hang there. And there's, you know, the thin ledges where your character kind of shuffles awkwardly along. You know, there's all those things, which aren't typical RPG stuff. It just looks like an RPG. It looks like a JRPG. But it really isn't.
Yeah, that's fair. Looks like an RPG is pretty good. I like that.
What I do think is really cool is Like, when there are things happening, when the character stuff is happening, it's kind of, like, really cool and almost surreal. The monster designs are kind of humdrum. They're, like, just... They're not interesting enough to be, like, grotesque. They're just kind of things. Like, this is a slightly weird wolf. This is a slightly weird ape man. This is a slightly weird bird. You know, they're not that great. The masters kind of look like... Honestly, they kind of look like cut-rate colossi. They really do. They're okay. They're great fights. They make full use of the chain. It kind of makes you wish that this game was a lot shorter and just kind of like a Mad World sort of game where it kind of quick level crank you straight into a boss, which is something that Shadow of Colossus kind of tried to do, which kind of worked in its favor. Like, imagine Shadow of Colossus, except instead of riding for a few minutes, you had to go through like a dungeon of possibly an hour or 2 hours long before you fought the Colossus. I don't know, maybe you think it's a good idea. I don't think that would work.
Once upon a time, I may have thought that was a good idea, but I don't know about now. I think that would...
Yeah, I mean, it's something it's like, well, maybe it'd be a good idea, but maybe not. What I do like is, as I said, like when you have to do things with the Elena character, it works really well. She does that, just that kind of creepy thing where she talks directly at the camera and just kind of stares at you. when you get to, like, talk to her, you can choose like chat and gift and things, and she's like, hi, how are you doing, what's up? I'm like, Nani.
Oh, you know me, just balancing the checkbook.
Yeah, like it's interesting, and you do grow like fond of her, because every time in the plot, all the characters in the game are actually vegetarians. Kind of relates to the story in a way, because they all worship the Eos, or Ios god, I think it is, in this, like, that's the religion, they're all vegetarians, and you have to consume meat to cure this curse. And so they keep handing her these, like, grotesque, purple, still-beating, like, lumps of flesh, and she's just kind of like, yeah, you gotta eat it. She's just got, like, the most, like, what the hell? Like, kind of thing going on. It's kind of confronting. Like, it works very effectively for kind of presenting these characters in a more interesting way. The story does have twists and turns, not many, but just enough that finishing the game is at least kind of worthwhile. It doesn't cheese you out. It does have kind of, yeah, some of these characters are, you know, more is going on than what is presented, as kind of like, yes, good, as you would expect.
Yeah.
My only real complaint about that is, basically, as you might expect, there's a perfect or really super great ending. It's kind of the worst one, because it's just, like, a super happy ending, really, and almost all of the not happy endings are much more thematically interesting. Like, stuff happens in them, and it's kind of, like, dramatic, whereas, yeah, like, I don't know, this is one of the interesting games where I don't think the perfect ending really is the best ending for the storyline. It, you know, Shadow of the Colossus would be a little bit of a different game if everything was worked out fine and it just kind of went home. That would be, maybe not the second best game of all time, you know.
Congratulations.
Right?
You solved the evil that would be amazing. I want a cut of Shadow of the Colossus where
everything worked it. Out just fine. Good work, Wanderer. Thanks!
And then you and the girl and the horse all go home.
Yeah, everything worked out. Pat on the back. But just to get across like how dark the game can get, I'm not going to tell you the real endings. Sorry, I'm going to tell you those. You'll have to, at the very least, look them up, although they lose a little bit of impact. And the game makes it a pain in the ass to get them, because it's all based on how much your chain is thinging, and it's like a big pain in the ass. But if you fail to return home in time with the flesh, your character will return, and Elena will have been completely monsterized, and he basically just loses the will to live and lets the monster actually kill him. That's the bad end if you run out of time. It's a non-standard game over. The game's not really messing around, is what I'm trying to get across. It gets pretty dramatic in places when it wants to, and I like that about it. It really kind of, it stresses you out a bit. It's like, yeah, this is serious. It's gonna be serious. You have to actually, you know, work for it. Okay. as far as I know, you don't have anything else to say about this one, because...
No, I played it for a little bit, and I was like, yeah, it's alright.
We had a hard time getting people to grab their Wiis and start jerking it, you know? It was difficult.
But we did...
We did...
Another game. We did Senran Kagura. So, I mean...
Yeah, everyone showed up for that. Thanks, everybody. Everyone was like, oh, get me in on that.
So, I think it was the
game about love and romance and horrible crony and beast flesh. Not playing the Cronenberg game. You know what's great about this game? You know, it is available digitally on the Wii U.
Is it really?
Yes! Huh. You can buy it on the Wii U storefront. It's right there. Go buy it, everybody. All six of you that bought the Wii U. Ranking time!
So, just to throw out a number, we've got 378 and 379 is Radiata Stories and Dark Savior, which are... Dark Savior is a game near and dear to me and you.
No, I like Dark Savior, except for...
a lot of Dark Savior.
Yeah, it's a... yeah.
I think that's a good starting place for this.
I think so. My favorite thing about this game is that it really does genuinely try and use the Wiimote and the Wii itself, like the control style of it, to make a game. Yeah. A lot of the complaints about the Wii was that it was too focused on waggle fests and kind of like games that kind of thoughtlessly used the Wiimote, or it just had a game that was basically a regular game that was just put on the Wii. When you had the Xbox 360 and the PS3, and they both looked a lot better and had, you know, kind of ostensibly better controllers, because they were just controllers. So this is one of the very few Wii games that technically I'd say is a must-play. I know that sounds weird, but I'm not saying it's a must-finish, but if you are interested in what games kind of utilize the Wii and the Wiimote in an interesting way... This is probably one of the few that you can play and go like, oh, okay, that's actually really cool. Oh, okay. I don't know if I want to keep playing it, but I definitely picked it up and I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool. I really like being able to just point at enemies and then you chain them and you fling them around and you mess them up. I'm like, that's really cool. And they did try. And it has a proper ending, which is not true of Dark Savior.
Okay, yeah, so I guess minus Dark Savior, the controls are... I'm not a big fan of motion controls. I've mentioned a couple of times, I don't know if on the show, but elsewhere, that I like to play these things on hardware. And so controls are a big deal to me. And man, I do not like controlling this game. On the other hand, though, Dark Savior wasn't terribly fun to control either.
I mean, as I said, you could do so much worse than this game.
You could, which I think is maybe this middle of the list isn't a terrible place to put it.
I'll tell you what, it probably does better than Sega Sonic the Hedgehog.
Ooh.
That's a trackball game.
Yes! I like trackball games, too. I almost bought a trackball to play trackball games.
I already way ahead of you. I own like the work.
I'm impressed because I was close. I almost got a big arcade stick with a trackball in it, just so I could play Sega Sonic the Hedgehog. And then I'm like, I'm as terrible as I am with money. I don't know though. I mean, God,
because like basically there are a lot of things in this game that I look. I mean, it's weird to say other than. The game is passable. It's enjoyable enough that I think you can finish it quite comfortably. It's not super long. It's not like, it's not gonna take, it's not a 100-hour RPG. When I said it's not really an RPG, I truly meant that. The dungeon exploring kind of starts to wear thin by, I don't know, the fourth or fifth one, but it's still okay. You can still play it, and you're not gonna be like, oh god, I don't really want to finish this. You can get through it, and you'll be like, okay, well, that was probably worthwhile, which I like enough, and it's novel. It's quite novel, and I really appreciate that they wanted to focus on at least something more like love story, romance, kind of, you know, like it's trying to do that rather than just be, it's a, you know, like so many RPGs, so many games are, it's a war, it's the killing, it's the death game. It's the fight. You know, this game is at least... Well, the impetus of the plot is you're going to have to help your partner, who is also not specifically helpless. She's just not really in a state to fight through a bunch of dungeons. She kind of hangs out. She still does her own thing. She helps earn, you know, money. She helps try and spruce up the place. She's not like a weak character. She's much stronger as a character than your character, because he's just kind of a... There's a funny bit in the story where basically, rather than make a promise that he will, I think, basically come back, or that he'll, you know, like that it'll be okay or whatever, he just kind of runs off, because he'd kind of rather face all of the monsters of the dungeon than make a promise, which I think is kind of funny, in a way. It's a little, like, it's a little human about it. I appreciate that aspect of it quite a bit.
It's admirable. You pick a number and I'll probably agree with it.
Well, I'm gonna have to drag around, I don't think I can put it above Nier. Everyone gets mad at me about that, you know? They all just, Nier is so good. It's, like, such a great game. That's why everyone likes it. It's, you know, play this game. It's also pretty good.
It is pretty good.
Let me have a look. Herzog is an admirable game, even if I actually don't really want to play it ever again in my life.
I think about Herzog once in a while, and I think about playing it.
Don't play it.
It's better than Saga Frontier, I think, which is a weird thing, because I don't think it's as good as Dragon Force, but it's better than Saga Frontier, so...
Dragon Force. Dragon Force
is a really... Like I said, I don't often buy Saturn games for as much money as they are some days, but man, I really, really like Dragon Force. We could put it right above Nier, just to stick it to him, because I'm not the biggest fan of Nier either.
Hell yeah, I'm doing it. You can't stop me. Woo! I'll do it. That'll get me. If I ever get to meet Yokotaro, he'll be like, no.
Be like, I was banished. Going to do an interview with you guys, but I picked an episode out of a hat.
Out of the blue, I looked at your list. I saw that you put the, what the goddamn is the Pandora's Tower. That's the name of the game we're playing. You put that above Nier, and I disagree.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you're gonna have to finish both Nier and Pandora's Tower to argue with me. So go out there and play Pandora's Tower and come back to me, because
we're untouchable now.
It's a very small list of people that will have finished both games.
Unfortunately, they probably listen to this podcast.
Oh God, I hear them. They're banging down the door. Get out of here. We're ranking it. It's gonna go at 352. Above Nier, and below Famicom Detective Club 2, which was actually the remake of that one? It doesn't
that
matter.
I don't know.
It's also good. Actually, these three games are all good. I wanted to put this one above Jet Force Gemini, because god damn do I hate trying to finish that game. It is a monster to even attempt. I don't have anything positive to say. Get your Pandora's Tower on your Wii U. Go buy it.
Yeah, if it's on your Wii U, just go pick it up. I mean, you could do a lot worse for, what is it, 10, 20 bucks?
I assume it's $100.
I would say, yeah, maybe an Australian money.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HD Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it, because you like us, and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.